Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjock.com. Joined by Gary D'Amato, I am Rob Hernandez. It is the run-up to the Ryder Cup here on Talking.Golf. All Ryder Cup, all the time. And Gary D'Amato, we will start with our What's Up segment, powered by our Instagram page, at wis.golf. We're going to keep Megan Augustine very, very busy over the next 2.5 to 3 weeks as we get ready for the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits. She, of course, our chief Instagrammer, and she will be getting a lot of the images that we provide her from Whistling Straits and the run-up to Whistling Straits on our Instagram account, at wis.golf. But first of all, Gary D'Amato, welcome in. I don't know about you, but I've got Ryder Cup fever after that news conference on Wednesday and Captain Steve Stricker announcing his captain's picks. It really feels real, doesn't it?
It does, Rob, especially being up there at Whistling Straits, you know, seeing all the grandstands up, even more than when, a lot more than when I was at the State Open and I sneaked over there for a morning and took some photos. The grandstands are probably three times what they were then, because they were still building them. And I'm told it's the biggest build out for any domestic Ryder Cup or PGA Championship. So, and 30% more than a PGA Championship. So huge build out. So being up there at the Straits, it was a beautiful weather day, and having Stricker making his announcement that it feels real now, finally.
It was a great production on Wednesday. Julius Mason of the PGA of America kind of emceed the whole thing. And of course he does a brilliant job doing that. He's really good. And I think helped make Steve Stricker feel at ease, you know, and especially from the technological end where you have these six captains picks all appearing via Zoom, and it was seamless. And then to go between you guys in the attendance at Whistling Straits, and then those of us who were afar that joined in over the Zoom. What was your impression of the way Steve handled things and the way that this really what was a huge milestone in his captaincy finally now is behind him?
I thought he was, you know, prepared for every question. I'm sure that that he had some media coaching, you know, as these captains do, I think, when they get in these news conferences. But I think he anticipated just about every question that was thrown at him. He had a lot of notes in front of him that he referred to, some analytics stuff, and then some notes on players. And so, yeah, I think he was ready for the questions. I thought he handled himself very well.
And of course, a lot of the selections kind of went to form with Tony Finau, Jordan Spieth, Xander Schauffele, topping the top three picks that we thought a week ago here on Talking.Golf would be no-brainers. We kind of put Harris English in that mix, and indeed he was one of the captain's picks. And then it was Daniel Berger and Scottie Scheffler, which if there were any surprises, you know, it came at the back end, which in a lot of Ryder Cup years, you're talking two, maybe three captain's picks, and it's going to be a wild card type situation anyway. Let's go right to the chase, Gary. What did you think of the fact that Patrick Reed, Kevin Na not on the team, Scottie Scheffler and Daniel Berger on the team? I like the reasoning. I'm just curious what your thoughts were when the announcement was made.
Yeah, just a very, very mild surprise. Maybe a little bit at Scottie Scheffler. You called Scottie, Rob, in your when we talked a week ago, and not that I disagreed with it. I just thought, you know, he jumped over a couple guys to number 14 to pick Scottie Scheffler, 14th in the points. Jumped over Reed. Jumped over Webb Simpson. I didn't think he was going to go quite that far down in the points. I thought he was going to stick more to a 1 through 12 or 13. you know, certainly no quarrel. Scottie Scheffler, although he hasn't won yet, you know, he's performed very well in the major championships with top tens in the last couple. I think he finished tied for 18th at the Masters. So certainly you can't quibble with that pick. Obviously, he wanted to go young, which he did. And he wanted to go for guys who hit it a long way, which he did. I'm sure Whistling Straits is going to be set up pretty long. And almost everyone on his team, you know, can bomb it, a couple exceptions. So what did you think, especially leaving maybe Reed off?
Reed was the one that really surprised me by the end. At the end, you know, as much as I championed, you know, late in the game, Kevin Na and his recent record, you know, I can see where there were some boxes with Kevin Na that didn't get checked. And really with both Reed and Na, I think the two things, Gary, as I sat there and watched Steve Stricker do his thing on the Zoom the other day, was the fact that this team very much reflects its captain. There's not a lot of flash there in terms of, you know, guys who might steal the limelight outside of Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, but they've been told to be on their best behavior. Otherwise, I think it's a pretty solid representation of who Steve Stricker is. And I tried to imagine myself, you know, imagine Steve Stricker handling the personalities that are Patrick Reed and Kevin Na. And not that that's a bad thing. I mean, these guys have a lot of passion. Patrick Reed's Ryder Cup record, I think, you know, in the end, as you spoke to last week, you hope some of these decisions don't come back to haunt the captain. And a guy who's, you know, unbeaten in singles play in the Ryder Cup and Patrick Reed, you hope that doesn't become an issue down the stretch if someone like Scottie Scheffler isn't able to come through with even a half a point on Sunday. But I really like the guys, and especially the way they presented themselves in the news conference. You know, Harris English is excited to kind of have a crack at being that, you know, maybe that utility player on this team because he can pair so well with so many. Scottie Scheffler, I think, is going to be the wild card. And Daniel Berger is a guy that's played a lot of golf, especially in the majors with Steve Stricker. That point was made on a lot of the coverage of the news conference the other day. And I think he's acquitted himself well in you know, when the spotlight's been on him. He seems like he has the right personality for this Ryder Cup team and this venue. And I think, you know, the selections that Steve made were outstanding. I guess as you look at it, was there anybody else, Gary, that, you know, perhaps, you know, maybe should have merited some late consideration or somebody that, you know, might have left open a potential weakness for Team USA?
Well, you know, one of my picks was Webb Simpson, finished 13th in the points, and Steve bypassed him to pick Scottie Scheffler, one guy farther down, one spot farther down in the points. But, you know, Webb has been around the block. He does have team experience, but obviously Steve was going for youth and for guys who hit it a long way. He wanted Scottie on that team because of Scottie's length, I think. You know, Jason Kolkrak was another one I'm sure Steve probably looked at pretty closely because he's a good putter and he's a long off the tee. But again, you would have had a 36-year-old rookie on the team. I think it's okay to have rookies, you know, in their mid-20s, but to have a 36-year-old rookie, I think people might have looked a little bit sideways at that. One thing I want to say about Reed, Rob, is that, you know, Steve talked about how tough it was to not pick him and what a tough call it was that he had to make, but he said Patrick handled it like a true champion and said all the right things. But it's a little disturbing that, you know, people have gone on Twitter and really a lot of people have ripped Steve for passing over Reed. One guy on Twitter called Steve a coward, and Patrick liked all those tweets, which I found disappointing. If you're in his shoes, I don't think you like those tweets that are ripping the captain of the Ryder Cup team. But, you know, that's Patrick Reed. He's a little bit different. And I'm sure he was really disappointed. But to like tweets that are ripping Steve, I don't think was very classy.
No, and let's not forget that, you know, the Ryder Cup captaincy, you know, position has become kind of a brotherhood of people who have done it before and probably will do it in the future, which is why perhaps Zach Johnson's a vice captain. And, you know, that stuff, you know, if this works with what Steve Stricker is doing, you know, it may be a long time before we see Captain America as a captain's pick ever again. And at any point, and you know, it's going to be, you make it on points or you don't make it at all. because that's the kind of thing that really divides a team room. And, you know, I thought that, you know, you've got Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas. We'll talk about their potential pairing towards the end of the podcast. But, you know, you're going to have trouble pairing some guy with Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, do you really need to have somebody else, you know, take one for the team and pair himself with Patrick Reed? I mean, again, you eliminated more problems than you created, I think, with these picks. And I really feel that, you know, he also maybe forced the hand of Padraig Harrington. We'll talk in a minute, Gary, about the European picks, because, you know, there's a lot of the same issues facing Team Europe that faced Steve Stricker is that related to experience and inexperience. But first, I wanted to get to one last point from Wednesday's news conference, and that was your mention of Steve's use of analytics. And he admitted he's not a big analytics guy, but one of the numbers, and I think you used it high in your story on, you know, the overall makeup of the team, and that's the fact that U.S. rookies have not fared poorly in recent Ryder Cups. And in there are six rookies on this year's team. Four of them were added on Wednesday ahead of or after Colin Morikawa and Patrick Cantlay made it on points. And again, you know, the more I heard that kind of talk, the better I felt about this team.
Yeah, the last time there were six rookies on a team, Rob, was 2008. Steve was, I believe, one of them. And that's the team that went to that. Hosted at Valhalla and won. So for people who are criticizing the number of rookies on the team, you just have to go back, you know, a dozen years or so, and you see that we had a pretty good team with six rookies on it. So I understand Steve's reasoning there. And I think a lot of people, when they examine this team, will agree that he, you know, he made some pretty good picks here.
Talking.golf presented by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. That's because Iron Jock infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. That kills 99.9% of bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. If you want to see what Iron Jock is all about and if you want to join Iron Jock Nation, head over to ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. Gary D'Amato, what's next is it's in the hands of Padraig Harrington. He's feeling the same pressure this weekend that Steve Stricker felt coming out of the Tour Championship. And he will make his three captain's picks now on Sunday night after the BMW Championship, the BMW PGA Championship on the European Tour. And what's next here on Talking.Golf, powered by our Twitter results handle, @wis.golflive. A bevy of high school and college results has been posted to @wis.golflive all week long. And we'll add to it this weekend with more college results. The PGA Tour champions just get underway here on Friday down in St. Louis. The U.S. Senior Women's Amateur with our friend Maggie Leaf. And then, of course, next week, look forward to Stage 1 Corn Ferry Tour qualifying school results. Jordan Hahn in Texas and George Kneiser, I believe, down in Alabama to get going with Stage 1 of Corn Ferry Tour qualifying school. But Gary D'Amato, the European team, as I went and kind of did the research on who might be in, who might be out, I didn't realize that essentially the youth movement that we're seeing with Team USA was kind of the way things went in France 3 years ago when John Rahm and Tommy Fleetwood and Tyrrell Hatton and Matt Fitzpatrick, you know, made the team as rookies. That was four rookies, but, you know, a lot of those guys you don't look at as rookies. I kind of feel the same way about Team USA with Colin Morikawa, you know, Xander Schauffele, those kind of guys. But as we look at Europe, you've got that group. You've got a couple of potential first-timers in Victor Hovland, who's already clinched his spot based on his status in world points, and Bernd Wiesberger, who, based on where he is at this point in the leaderboard at the BMW PGA Championship, looks to be in on European points. And then you've got a lot of old guys. I mean, Lee Westwood, who 2 years ago said that he's pretty happy just being a vice captain, is in contention for his 11th Ryder Cup. And then you've got three captain's picks that if you had to make them today, I don't know if I would go off the board in a way from Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, and Justin Rose. That could make the European team very experienced in a hurry, Gary, but also very old. How, if you're Padraig Harrington, do you balance that, especially when you've seen what Steve Stricker did in terms of really going after the youth movement there on Team USA?
You know, Rob, I read a quote somewhere by Padraig recently within the last week or so, where he said he can't picture the European team without Sergio and Ian Poulter on it. So I'm guessing he's definitely leaning toward those guys and their veteran leadership and their Ryder Cup records. I mean, both guys have tremendous Ryder Cup records. And in fact, those two guys together, Rob, have played 63 Ryder Cup matches, and the entire U.S. team has played 49. So
wow.
We have seen over the years that no matter what the form is of Sergio Garcia entering the Ryder Cup, the guy just plays great in this competition and makes putts, and so does Ian Poulter. And you know, that's some history that you just can't ignore. I don't think if you're Padraig Harrington, he's got a couple of young guys on his team, as you mentioned. But he's got a lot of experience. I mean, Rory McIlroy is young and experienced, in this format. So I see his team being a mix of those couple, two or three or four rookies, and then some guys with an awful lot of experience. Where do you see him going?
Well, I think the real, interesting thing to watch this weekend is, where does Shane Lowry factor into the leaderboard, and does he play his way in on points? There's a scenario where Shane Lowry could bump Lee Westwood from one of the final automatic berths, and that only complicates the decision-making process for Padraig Harrington, because then potentially you have four guys with tremendous Ryder Cup experience. I believe, if I do my math here, it's 34 Ryder Cup berths between Westwood, Garcia, Poulter, and Rose, which is just a ton of experience. And then, you know, Shane Lowry would kind of be the Jason Kokrad of the European team, where he's up there in years but has never played on a Ryder Cup team, which I didn't know until I heard them talking about it here on the telecast this weekend on the Golf Channel. And, you know, that's a guy that's had a lot of miles and a lot of success to never have played on a Ryder Cup team. And then you go further down the list of guys that presumably would be in contention for those spots. Henrik Stenson, who hasn't played particularly well until late. And then a couple of potential rookies in Victor Perez and Robert McIntyre. And again, you know, when you have some of these other guys, you know, going up against a very young American team, you know, do you at least, you know, go with, you know, Garcia, Poulter, Rose, you know, one more Ryder Cup cycle and see how that works out for you. I think they did a lot of their transitional selection of Ryder Cup players 3 years ago in France with some of these guys that got on for the first time. And when you've got a John Rahm and a Tommy Fleetwood and what they've shown, Tommy Fleetwood in France 3 years ago, and John Rahm, it seems like every day since then, you know, there's not a lot of weak spots right now in the European lineup either. And I think you're safe going with Garcia, Poulter, and Rose. And if I were the captain, that's kind of the direction I'd lean, because then it gives you a lot of opportunity to pair that experience with that youth and then really solidify Team Europe going forward.
Yeah. Good points, Rob. I think in Justin Rose's case, I don't think he's been in top form the last few months. I think he would even tell you that. So it'll be interesting to see what Padraig does, because he and Shane Lowry are best buddies. They're very, very close. And in order for him not to pick Shane, if Shane doesn't play his way onto the team, he would have to put aside some strong personal feelings. He really has a great deal of respect for Lowry. They were paired together, Rob, in the final round of the PGA Championship in May. I was down there at Kiowa, and both guys came in the both Lowry and Harrington came in the media room afterward, and they both were glowing about how well they played each other's company, how much they enjoyed the round. They both shot, I believe, 68 in the final round, and I remember Padraig saying, "Shane Lowry will fear no man on the first tee of the Ryder Cup." So he obviously feels strongly for Shane, and if Lowry doesn't play his way onto the team, if I'm Padraig, I'm probably picking him based on what I know, what he said, and how he feels about Shane Lowry as a competitor. So yeah, he's going to have some choices. He's going to have some difficult choices, and I guess we'll find out next week.
Well, and the BMW PGA is not helping him any. Justin Rose threw 36 holes, currently at 9-under in fourth place. So, you know, whatever struggles he's had of late seem to be, you know, going away this week, and he's making a late push for it. And Shane Lowry is at number is seventh on the leaderboard, you know. And then you get Ian Poulter, who is 81st, misses the cut for the weekend, won't be around at Wentworth. But yet, I believe on his final hole, he knocks his second shot on the par five in the water, takes a drop, and then holes out the chip shot for a birdie, which is what we've come to expect from Ian Poulter. And I don't know, I guess from a karma vibe standpoint, if Team Europe can get on the plane without Ian Poulter on it, I just think that there's a certain, you know, sense of relief for Team USA that they don't have to see that all week at Whistling Straits.
Good point, Rob. You know, Ian Poulter has a lot of brass, and he would be one who would be firing up the Europeans and enjoying reveling in the all the abuse being heaped on him by the American fans. He just rises to the occasion when that happens. So, yeah, it might be a good thing for Team USA if Ian doesn't make the team. Awful lot of experience there, and he's been a thorn in the American side for a long time.
And the other thing to note off the BMW PGA Championship is Tyrrell Hatton, who was high on the list, both in the European points list and the world points list, in this complicated formula that the Europeans are using to choose their team. He also misses the cut after a 169 today. So he and Robert McIntyre and Ian Poulter are all, it looks like, outside looking in for the weekend over there at in England. So it remains to be seen. Last part on the European part, though, Gary, is the fact that, you know, Steve Stricker made it quite clear that the results of the PGA Tour playoffs, and specifically the Tour Championship, weren't going to carry a lot of weight in the final selection process. That proved to be true. If you're Padraig Harrington, how much do you look at this leaderboard that has been glued to the Golf Channel as they talk about the European Final Four or Final Three? Do you put much stock in it, and especially in the carryover, or do you look at the greater body of work as Steve Stricker did?
Well, it's interesting. I think Padraig has a little bit of an advantage, Rob, in that he knows now who's on the U.S. team, and he can look at those guys Stricker picked, and he can look at his guys, and you know, he's got an advantage in knowing how some of his players might play against some of the U.S. players. So it's a little bit of an advantage to pick last, because you can see what, you know, you can see what you have to beat. And I think that might play into some of his decision-making too, is when he looks at Scottie Scheffler's game and Daniel Berger's game and the guys that Steve picked, he can look at his own guys and say, yeah, this guy matches up well against those guys. So I think that's going to be part of the equation too for him.
Well, it remains to be seen what's going to happen. Sunday night, we'll know the final three picks after the final automatic qualifiers have been selected here by Team Europe. And as we record this podcast here on a Friday, just a handful of guys have clinched their spots for the Europeans. Five, in fact, John Rahm, Tommy Fleetwood, Rory McIlroy, Paul Casey, and Victor Hovland are the ones that have clinched their spots. Again, it's weird, Gary, because I look at this list and there are guys ahead of them on each of the points things, but those individuals haven't solidified their spot. It is a little bit kind of weird to the outsider, but it certainly is a formula that's worked here, at least the last couple Ryder Cups. So that remains to be seen. And then we'll find out the three captains' picks on Sunday. And then we can really let the speculation begin. And as we wrap up what's next here on Talking.Golf, we're going to wrap it up with this whole thing has been the Ryder Cup Report, Gary, powered by Kohler Golf. And it's going to be the Ryder Cup Report through the matches in a couple of weeks. But, you know, now we can start looking at least on the U.S. side towards who do you pair. And before we get to that, you know, for those that are a little bit fuzzy on the format, each of the first 2 days, you have morning foursomes and afternoon four ball. Would you care to refresh my memory as to what's a foursome and what's a four ball, Gary?
It's a foursome. A foursome is when I go out with three guys in the morning. No. A foursome, Rob, as you know, is alternate shot with a teammate where on every other hole, one American player would hit first, for instance, and the his teammate would hit second, and they would alternate shots until the ball is holed while their European opponents are doing the same thing. Four ball, people commonly refer to it as best ball or better ball, is when you have two guys on a team against two Europeans, and you count the lower score of the two guys, a par or a bogey, you pick the par. And if the other team makes two birdies, obviously they win with that hole with a birdie. So interesting formats, foursomes or alternate shot, as people call it, is probably the tougher the two to play, because there's only one ball in play. And if your partner hits it in a bad spot, you've got to play it from that spot. And there's a whole lot of guys have to get rid of that feeling of letting their partner down by missing a shot. That has to go out the window. You cannot apologize for poor shots in that format, or you're sunk.
And Gary, for people who haven't followed closely, we/the U.S. have been pretty good at four ball, at least in the Thursday morning session, each of the last two Ryder Cups, going 4-0 at Hazeltine and 3-1 at Le Golf National in France. And obviously the fast start went away in a hurry when the Team Europe won all four of the Thursday foursome matches in the afternoon. So how do you, if you're Captain Stricker, how do you start looking at the old lineup card? As you know, I think it's really important, in my opinion, to take one day at a time. And so if you're Steve Stricker looking at Thursday, how do you break it down, and who do you put on the course Thursday morning to get off to a good start at Whistling Straits?
Yeah, I think standard operating procedure, Rob, in these formats is to find two guys with very similar games and alternate shot, because guys who hit at the same distance, so they're used to hitting the same clubs that they would normally hit. And then for the four ball, you try to put, I think, a guy, either two guys who make a lot of birdies, or a guy who makes a lot of birdies with a guy who's very steady. So you have the steady guy guaranteeing you par on every hole, and the guy who makes, you know, who's got more firepower can try to make a lot of birdies. Jordan Spieth and Scottie Scheffler, I think, would make a really good pair. A couple of Texans who are very close friends. But Spieth's close with Justin Thomas, and they've paired together and had some success too. So that could be a pairing. I kind of like Finau and Kepka together in foursomes, Rob. And then DeChambeau, I think, is kind of a tough guy to pair with a partner. Who do you put with him? You suggested maybe, I think it was you who suggested maybe Harris English, kind of the steadying influence. So that might be a pairing. Cantlay, I think Morikawa can pair with just about anybody, because he's got such a great iron game. You might want him in foursomes and plot it out so that he hits on par threes, for instance, the tee shot. So he could pair maybe with Schofield or Cantlay. You could go a lot of different directions. Do you have any one or two or three teams in mind that you'd like to see, or that you think we're going to see?
Well, just going back over the success, what little there was at Le Golf National, I think you'd be foolish not to spend Thursday putting Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth in the anchor position in the morning and the afternoon. And then that takes away a couple of options that you outlined. And then again, I stand by my belief that Bryson DeChambeau, as the number three person in points, and his personality and his popularity with the American fans, needs to go out first in at least the morning session, see how he plays. Obviously, if we continue to see the same kind of record out of him that we did over in France, we might need to change things. But again, we don't know anything about how Bryson DeChambeau is going to perform in 2021, because he is a totally different golfer, a totally different physical human being than he was the last time we had these matches. So, what really complicates my selections, Gary, is in the Thursday morning four ball, you've got a couple of guys that you'd love to send out there in Brooks Koepka and Colin Morikawa, who have battled injury so over the last couple of months. And, you know, how much do you ride them early, and then who do you pair with them? I mean, form has been, you always send the number one points getter out in the morning session. So Morikawa's got to go out with somebody. I paired him up with Dustin Johnson, I believe, a couple of California boys that are, you know, one and two in the standings. And if you send them out behind DeChambeau and Schauffele, or somebody like Schauffele, then that seems pretty, I think that's pretty solid. And then the biggest question mark I have is Brooks Koepka going to be healthy? And if he is he healthy enough to bring along someone like Patrick Cantlay, who would be a Ryder Cup rookie, or Tony Finau, who he's paired with before? And do you put Cantlay in because he finished ahead of Finau in the point standings, or do you put Koepka and Finau out first because they have a history? And when I got to that point in the process, Gary, I said to myself, you know what? Steve Stricker has a lot of great options on this team. And, you know, it's going to be a reach for him to play Daniel Berger and Scottie Scheffler for sure in more than, you know, two matches on Thursday and Friday, because, you know, unless Koepka is hurting, unless Morikawa is hurting, you ride your horses and get the cup back to the U.S. side. That's your job. And you've got enough guys to do that 1 through 10 without getting too deep into the process and trying to figure out who these Ryder Cup rookies might pair with at the back end of the lineup.
Yeah, Rob, virtually the entire U.S. team and their caddies are going to be at Whistling Straits on Sunday and Monday. And so I'm sure they're going to go out in some assumed pairings, and Steve's going to take a look at how they play, and then he's going to get input from his assistants and from the players themselves about how those pairings work. So Steve's probably got an idea based on all the input that all the guys have given him, and that his captains have given him, his assistant captains. So there could be tweaks in the formula based on what happens Sunday and Monday in these practice rounds, but I just can't wait and see. I can't wait and see who's in that envelope when they're opened up, and who Europe's going to put against these guys too.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the other thing I will defer back to the news conference from the other day, the analytics part of this, have we passed the part where analytics are entered? When I asked Steve about this scouting service, the statistical service in a text, you know, they were the analytics guys. And I texted him because I wasn't sure if the reference in the question after the one I asked at the news conference about that dealt with scouts was the analytics. And it was. And he said to me that they help us with any stat you'd ever want to know. And Gary, at what point does it become analysis or paralysis by analysis? And at what point do you just go with your gut? I feel that Steve Stricker's gut over the years, he's surrounded himself with good people. He had, you know, the only time that anybody has ever called him into question is when he switched equipment early in his career. To me, he's the captain because he knows this team and he's invested all of who he is in this team. At what point do you throw the analytics out, and how much will that be a factor in how he pairs these guys together at the very end? He's got so many voices. Do you really need more numbers?
Yeah, I just think it's another tool at his disposal that he can fall back on. But like he said in the news conference, he's an old-fashioned guy and goes a lot on gut feel. And he's going a lot on what he's gathering input from all the players and all the assistant captains. I'm sure he's talked to these guys ad infinitum over the last couple months, and especially the last couple weeks. So I'm sure he's got a gut feel as to who would be paired, would be strong pairings. And then he'll rely on the analytics to sort of confirm maybe some things. But you can go crazy with those analytics. I'm sure he knows, like, in a strong left to right wind, which of these guys hit in the right rough, which guys hit in the fairway, or, you know, wind against you, how far they all carry their driver, you know, in a 20 mile per hour wind against you. I'm sure he's got all that stuff at his disposal. But then it comes a matter of, Rob, just telling these guys, hey, just go out, you know, play well, have fun, make some putts, and let's win this cup. I mean, it's a simple formula, really. The guys who drive it well, hit good iron shots, and make putts. That's the teams that win the Ryder Cup, and more often than not, it's been Europe doing that.
And Gary, as we wrap up Talking.Golf, let's talk a little bit about logistics. And a lot of this, you know, as we look back at 2018 in France, as I mentioned, the U.S. got off to a 3-1 lead after the morning session. And by the afternoon, they were staring at a 5-3 deficit. So they went 3-1 in the morning, 0-4 in the afternoon. And then on Saturday, the slide continued. They went 1-3 in the morning four ball and 2-2 in the afternoon. They were 4 points down going into singles. You thought maybe there was a chance. And then they got blitzed 7.5 to 4.5 in singles. As you look at the way the week breaks down, where do you see the critical part of this week, for the Americans, and what do they have to do to make this a match on Sunday?
That's a good question, Rob. You know, historically, I think Europe, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but just what I know about the Ryder Cup is that Europe has been historically much better in foursomes than America has been. So I think it's going to boil down a lot to how I think they handle their foursomes matches. If they can come out 2-2 ties in those two sessions of foursomes, I really like the U.S.'s chances. If they go 1-3 in both of those, or heaven forbid 0-4, it's going to be a tough hole to climb out of. But I really think this is going to be a lot of people are saying the Americans are heavily favored, and they are. If you go strictly off world rankings and major championships won, the Americans have a huge advantage. But as we know, it's not how it works in the Ryder Cup. And I do believe this is going to be a very tight Ryder Cup, maybe decided by a point or two at the most, I think. I think it's going to be very close.
17 has been the magic number for the last two winning teams, 17.5 by Europe in 2018 and 17 points by the U.S. at Hazeltine in 2016. We saw with the Solheim Cup 15-13 last weekend down at Inverness Club in Toledo. For the American sake and for the sake of the event, Gary, I'm hoping that it goes down to the last two spots on Sunday, because it would probably cap one of the more memorable Wisconsin sports weeks that we can remember. And you and I have been around a long time. There are two primetime Packer games. There's a good chance, based on the magic number right now, for the Milwaukee Brewers, your first place Milwaukee Brewers, that they could clinch the division the week of the Ryder Cup. And then you have Steve Stricker hosting all of his friends at Whistling Straits. Man, you've been around a long time. You've covered a lot of big events. Have you ever covered that many on top of each other? Luckily, we can just focus on the golf now. In another life, we would have had to worry about what the other things meant for what we're covering. No longer the case. But, boy, it's an exciting week if shaping up if you're a Wisconsin sports fan.
I don't remember too many weekends like this, potentially, like that one could become, Rob. It kind of reminds me of the Olympics, maybe, when you have Usain Bolt running 100 and Michael Phelps going after his eighth gold medal, and and the women's gymnastics team, you know, trying to sweep the medals and get to the podium. It's kind of like that, except it's all in our state, and it's all local teams and a local U.S. Ryder Cup captain. So it's going to be a crazy weekend, I think.
Well, and we want to make sure that our listeners here in Talking.Golf are assured the fact that even though we talked all Ryder Cup today, we will continue to follow some of the local golf events here through the next week. I know the Wisconsin PGA Section Championship is Monday and Tuesday at the University Club of Milwaukee. And then there's also you've got a full complement of high school and college events going on. The Badger women's golf team getting underway Monday and Tuesday down in South Carolina. The UW Green Bay women's golf team getting underway with a lot of promise out at South Dakota State. We'll continue to follow that. But Gary, it's going to be a tough juggling act these next 2 weeks, because this is a once in a lifetime event with a lot of intrigue and a lot of drama shaping up at Whistling Straits.
Well, Rob, I'm looking forward to you getting back into town, and we've got our hotel rooms in Green Bay, 50-minute ride from the Straits. We'll be making that ride every day, and I can't wait. We've been waiting for this week for a long, long time.
I can't believe we got a hotel room on Monday night, given that the Packers are in town. I'm not sure how.
Yeah.
I hope we're not going to be sleeping next to the ice machine on Monday night, but we'll be there eventually. And I don't plan to spend a lot of time in the hotel. I can't wait to get on the grounds at Whistling Straits. I know both you and I will be helping out and doing some work for today's TMJ4 out of Milwaukee. And it's just going to be the buzz about this Ryder Cup is really starting to build. It's exciting, and we'll continue to talk about it. We'll talk about it more next week on Talking.Golf when we know exactly who Padraig Harrington is going to bring the Whistling Straits. How does that sound?
That sounds good, Rob.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, I am Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf. Of course, Talking.Golf sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk more Ryder Cup again next week.